You're listening to audio from Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, where we train students to preach the Word and reach the world. For more free resources like this one, visit www.swbts.edu/media resources.
Thank you so much, and thank you, Dr. Patterson, for building this magnificent chapel to the glory of God and the furthering of the Great Commission. It's just so very beautiful, and for the privilege of being here with you to stand in the pulpit of L.R. Scarborough and share with you what I want to share with you today is one of the great privileges of my life. One of the things that Hurricane Katrina did was interrupt what had been the passion of my life, and that's the study of Southern Baptist evangelism. And I was all consumed in everything involved in helping the seminary and the city recover from that. Then the whole mission board, the North American Mission Board, brought all the evangelism workers of the convention to New Orleans after about 3 years after Katrina and asked me if I would come and speak to them about the state of Southern Baptist evangelism. And that gave me an excuse to lay down all the recovery stuff and dive back into what I'd been following all my life with an interruption of about 3 years or so. And as I dove back in and began to look around, God began teaching me some things, and I began seeing some things that have made a profound impact on my soul, and I want to talk with you today about what I have learned about the present state of Southern Baptist evangelism. The road we're going to walk begins with the amazing story of how Southern Baptist became the largest non-Catholic denomination in the United States of America. The best snapshot is this. In 1945, Southern Baptist baptized approximately 257,000 people for the year in their churches. In 1955, only 10 years later, Southern Baptist baptized about 417,000 people in just 10 years, nearly doubling in baptisms. To quote an ancient Hebrew expression, wow, that is amazing, phenomenal growth. How did they do it? The easiest way to explain is this picture. There you see how Southern Baptist exploded with all of that evangelistic growth. To put it in a sentence, Old MacBaptist had a farm. That was the genius of Southern Baptist evangelism. They developed a way of doing church that was very similar to the way a farmer raises crops. For instance, farmers need land in order to grow a crop and produce a harvest. Southern Baptists knew they needed a permanent presence in a community if they were going to reach a community, and so they emphasized church planting in order to have the permanent presence of the church around the people they wanted to reach. They knew that starting churches was the only way they could penetrate a community. But farmers know that if they want to grow a crop, they have to have the right climate for that crop. You can grow cotton in Mississippi, but it doesn't do too well in northern Canada. Southern Baptists knew that if you wanted to have an evangelistic church, you had to have an evangelistic climate within that church so that that church knew the priority of the church was the reaching of the lost for Christ. In order to do that, Southern Baptists in part used decisional preaching. That preaching which calls for an immediate and public response to the proclamation of the gospel of Jesus Christ, emphasizing evangelism in every worship service of the church. We basically took the format of an evangelistic crusade and incorporated into the weekly worship style of our churches. The invitation following every sermon was a weekly reminder that no one was right with God because they were in church. No one was right with God because they had a Christian mother or father, a Christian wife or a Christian husband. Only when you made a personal response to the gospel of Jesus Christ were you born again and a member of God's family. It was a constant reminder of why evangelism had to be the priority of the church. But farmers also know you can't get a crop if you don't plant seed in the ground. And they knew that most lost people don't go to church. What a startling revelation. They knew they had to get outside the church in order to share the gospel with those who needed it. And so they emphasized personal evangelism throughout the churches of our convention. For example, the typical Baptist church of that day would devote at least one night a week to evangelistic visitation, going out to the families in the community for the specific purpose of sharing the gospel with them. The gospel was not only proclaimed from the pastor behind the pulpit, it was explained from the lips of the people to their friends and their neighbors and people they had never met before as they went out planting the seed of the gospel in the souls of those in that community. But once planted in the soil, that seed needs to be cultivated. It needs enough water, but not too much. You got to keep the bugs away. You got to keep away things that will destroy that crop. Southern Baptists knew that sharing the gospel one time with a lost person rarely results in that lost person making a profession of faith and becoming a Christian. A process of cultivation was necessary for those who heard the gospel but did not respond immediately, so they could learn more and more of the gospel, and more the Bible could work on their souls. Sunday school became the cultivation strategy for Southern Baptist churches. It was the only thing you could join in a Baptist church and not be a member. And that was because they expected the typical Sunday school class on a typical Sunday morning to have lost people present in that Sunday school class. Why was that the emphasis? All ages were involved in studying the Bible and learning more and more about the gospel. It was more than that. It was also Bible-lationships. I created that word. Bible-lationships is a word that describes the genius of the Southern Baptist approach to Sunday school, where you combine the teaching of the Bible and the building of relationships. Because in the Southern Baptist Sunday school, we teach the Bible, but we also drink coffee and eat donuts. We teach the Bible, but we also have ice cream fellowships after church on a hot summer night. We teach the Bible, and we go to the hospital when people are sick. We prepare food for them when they have a death in the family or a tragedy in the family. And it was that combination of both explaining more and more of the Bible and building those relationships week by week with lost people that drew them closer and closer to Jesus Christ and to salvation. The Bible-lationship combination became a very effective process of cultivation. And farmers know that if they plant a good seed in good soil, have the right climate, and they cultivate that seed, in due time, the harvest will come. Southern Baptists used revival meetings as their primary harvest tool for at least 1 or 2 weeks each year. They would put the whole attention of the church on one simple question. What is the status of your relationship with God? If you are a Christian, are you walking with Jesus day by day and living for Him? If you are not a Christian, isn't it time for you to say yes to Jesus Christ, to repent and to believe? It became a very normal time for those who had the gospel clearly explained many times over time, who had formed meaningful relationships with people in the church, to come to Christ and have that profession of faith and be baptized. It is important that we understand the true nature of the genius of what Southern Baptists did with these methodologies. It was not the individual methods that produced the incredible harvest. It was the interaction of those methods with each other that created the integrated process described in the New Testament as sowing and reaping. A wheel alone generates power, but if you add cogs to a wheel and create a gear, you multiply the power those wheels produce. And so Southern Baptists took these basic methodologies and they were integrated together in a seamless way of doing church, and it created an incredible process for identifying the lost, sharing with the lost, and bringing the lost to Jesus Christ. It was the Southern Baptist way of doing church to embody sowing and reaping in the very processes of what we did week by week. See, for example, 1 Corinthians 3:6, I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. These particular interactive methods, interestingly enough, were not the result of a vote of the convention or a strategy coming out of Nashville or the Home Mission Board. The lack of comment on how these individual methods became an integrated process is one of the more interesting aspects of my research, but I'll come back to that later. Now let's go back to those statistics. 1945, Southern Baptists baptized about 257,000 people. 1955, just 10 years later, Southern Baptists baptized about 450,000 people. There's that amazing, amazing mark. But what happened? For the next 50 years, we could not increase even 35,000 in our baptisms. And in fact, last year, we baptized fewer people than we did in 1948. More Baptists, more churches, more resources, more of everything, but fruit. What happened to the farm? For many years, I said Southern Baptists are a harvest-oriented denomination living in the midst of an unseeded generation. We reduced the amount of planting that we do in the lives of lost people. We neglected cultivation after the gospel was shared. And not surprisingly, we found the harvest getting smaller and smaller. But I realize now that something more is going on. Today, I say we are like gardeners working the window box, not farmers working a field. We are actually the grandchildren of farmers, keeping harvest stories alive over coffee and dessert at family reunions. The methods that we use are not the crucial issue. The Bible speaks little of methods. An open fire, an oven, or a microwave will all accomplish the same purpose. Tasks will always outlive methods, and this also applies to whatever new methods you come up with for doing evangelism and ministry. Methods are not the crucial issue. The amount of money available to spend on evangelism and missions is not the crucial issue. In 1906, W.W. Hamilton created the first Department of Evangelism for the SBC, and he was given no money to do it. But he created a great department, included more than 20 evangelists at one time, and just an amazing story. Later on, there was a tragic embezzlement of the Home Mission Board by the treasurer that nearly bankrupted the Home Mission Board. They had to cut many of their ministries, including closing the Department of Evangelism. And in 1936, they relaunched it with Roland Q. Level as the only employee of the evangelism department, not even a secretary. But in his time, he laid the groundwork for the most fruitful period of baptisms and evangelism that we've ever had in the history of the SBC. During that legendary 1945 to 1955 period, the Department of Evangelism never had more than three employees, and that includes a secretary. Money is important. Sometimes it's even very important. But it is not what is hindering our lack of fruitfulness. The gospel's power is not the crucial issue. Our message has the same power to transform any life today as it had in the first century when Jesus was preaching it. We have one maximum security prison in Louisiana, at Angola. It's the largest maximum security prison in the United States, the largest collection of violent people in our nation. More than 5,000 men, many of them have prison sentences so long they will never walk out alive. They will die in prison, more than 90%. Most would agree that these guys are not particularly good prospects for either salvation or a call to ministry. But 15 years ago, we began a program for training for ministry in the Angola prison with some inmates in whose life God was working. And as we watched this group of prisoners that we taught the same thing we teach on our campus get equipped for ministry, amazing things began to happen. We have about 150 graduates to date over these 15 years, and upon completion of their studies, each man has to become a pastor or start some kind of ministry within the prison. I suppose you could call this a cell church movement. And as these guys have spread throughout that prison of 5,000 men, the violence has dropped dramatically. It is a different place. It has shocked and amazed people all over the justice system of the United States. There's that ancient Hebrew word again. Wow! Our gospel is a living power capable of transforming any life in any circumstances. It was then, it is now. What's wrong? Discipleship, I believe, is the crucial issue. The spiritual state of the farmer, not the farm, is the root of our problems in the SBC. At the end of the day, this is the hard truth that is staring at me. The best question is, what is wrong with us? First, we are not anointed. The conversion of a soul to Christ is the work of the Holy Spirit. The shaking of a community in spiritual awakening and revival is the work of a Holy Spirit. But neither conversions nor the shaking of a community with the power of God is happening in most of our churches. We are not anointed. The Spirit is not working. We are so not anointed, we think not being anointed is normal. That we would be me and you and most of us. Second, we have been atomized. Scientists tell us that what looks like a solid wood pulpit is actually a composition of particles called atoms, which are actually compositions of smaller particles, which are composed of even smaller particles. Thinking about atomic particles can make you forget that whatever it's composed of, it is a wood pulpit. It does no good to focus on what method works. It is not methodology. It is the integrated process that gives a church fruitfulness in a community. You cannot separate sowing and reaping. One is never more important than the other. To focus on particular methods rather than building an integrated process in your church is a dead end. But more importantly, Southern Baptists are becoming the new Methodist. I love Methodists. They played a key role in the first and the second Great Awakenings. Their concept of a circuit-riding preacher was a brilliant strategy for the circumstances of the day. With that strategy of the circuit rider, they were able to multiply churches even though they had a small number of preachers. And they were able to evangelize the American frontier in the 19th and early 20th century. A phenomenal story. They made holy living a core value, and they were called Methodists because they went about it so methodically as a part of their ongoing life. Much of what Southern Baptists know about evangelistic harvesting, we learned from Methodists. Many have observed Methodists and Baptists and have noticed our kinship together. I love what a Presbyterian minister in the movie A River Runs Through It would say to his sons about Baptists and Methodists. Watch this clip.
The Burns family ran a general store in a one-store town and still managed to do badly.
Mrs. Norman?
They were Methodists, a denomination my father always referred to as Baptists who could read.
I love it. Methodists are just Baptists who can read. We have much in common. The Methodists of today, however, have changed much through the years. Their efforts in evangelism and missions as a whole body have greatly diminished. The passion for holy living has been replaced by a behavior that is blending with the culture around them. And in many cases, their greatest theological fights as a denomination are over the normalcy of homosexuality. But most surprising, they have set new records for the fastest loss of membership in the history of the American church. As I've observed these changes in Methodist, I find myself saying, we are the new Methodist. In what ways are we similar? Universalism is settling into our pews as more and more Southern Baptists believe and behave as though they believe a personal relationship with Christ is not necessary to be right with God. Tolerance is beginning to overtake conviction as growing numbers of us are less comfortable taking a firm stance on moral or doctrinal issues. It's just being a fighter. More importantly, our behavior, the way we live our lives, is blending more and more with our culture. We are becoming less and less distinct and recognizable in the crowd of our nation's population. It's getting as easy to get drunk at a Baptist wedding as it is any other kind of wedding. We go to the same movies. We watch the same TV shows. We get comfortable using the same coarse language and coarse jokes. It's as likely for a Baptist kid to choose a soccer tournament or a soccer team over Sunday morning church as it is any other kid in the community. Since 1983, I've been saying that 70% of our churches are plateaued or declining. But I have news for you. If we apply the traditional measurement of growth to the 2007 SBC church statistics, the number of growing churches is about the same as it has been for several decades. The number of plateaued churches is smaller, but the number of declining churches is larger. If we add, however, even minimal evangelistic standards to the way we measure church growth, the shift is even more dramatic. In the most recent study of Southern Baptist churches recording a 10% or more increase of membership over a five-year period, that's what it takes to be classified as growing, 10% or more increase of membership over a five-year period, it indicates that 30.3% of our churches are growing. But if we add the requirement to have at least one baptism in the first year of the study and one baptism in the last year of the study, that number drops from 30.3% to 23.5%, which still qualifies growing. If we add an additional requirement to have a baptismal ratio of at least one baptism per 35 members, the percentage of growing churches drops from 23.5% to 11.9%. By the way, in the 40s and 50s, we were having one baptism per about 21, 22 members of our churches. To summarize, using minimal evangelistic standards instead of membership growth alone, reveals only 11.9% of SBC churches are growing today. That leads me to a second ancient Hebrew word. Uh-oh. What's going on? What I have come to realize is that also included in our evangelistic process when we were blowing and going and reaching people with a great power and fruitfulness, we also had a very aggressive discipleship process side by side with the evangelistic process. Here's a snapshot of some of the elements of discipleship training that were found in the typical Southern Baptist church in those days of great growth, churches of any size, any location. Sunday night program, including small group discipleship training for all ages of the church, and an evening worship service. Every January, a 4 to 6 day Bible conference teaching one book of the Bible to all ages of the church. At least once, and often more frequently, there were special events called study courses to train all age groups of the church in various aspects of Southern Baptist life and doctrine. In addition, you had weekly missions training program for young boys and girls, youth camp, children's camp, vacation Bible school, Bible drill, and on and on. Though often criticized for overemphasizing conversion, actually the opposite is true. In the era of our greatest evangelistic growth, the typical Southern Baptist church had more discipleship activities than evangelistic activities. Aggressive evangelism was matched by aggressive discipleship. We were discipleistic. It's another one of my words. By that I mean an evangelistic discipleship that held on to both tasks, evangelism and discipleship at the same time. And we continually sought to incorporate both evangelism and discipleship throughout our Southern Baptist churches. When did this emphasis on aggressive discipleship begin to fade? During the late 60s. When did our evangelistic fruitfulness begin to fade? During the 70s. But when our baptismal numbers started to weaken, we intensified our focus on evangelistic strategies and methods, but we did not reinvent or replace our discipleship process. Hear this from someone who's an evangelist by calling. We should have paid more attention to discipleship. Apparently, the biblical worldview that unconsciously inspired doing church like a farm is like the baton for the USA men's relay team in the Beijing Olympics. You're looking at a picture of some of the fastest sprinters the United States has ever had in its history of Olympic competition. But all their speed and talent meant nothing because the baton dropped between them and they were eliminated from the race. Earlier, Southern Baptists did not devise an intentional plan as a convention on how to do church evangelistically in order to reach people. Our churches worked out an evangelistic discipleship that wove the process of sowing and reaping into the ordinary processes of the church. As time went by and the world changed, the biblical worldview inspiring evangelistic discipleship dropped between Southern Baptist generations. When we did make an SBC plan for evangelism, we focused on improving the harvest component of the Baptist farm, not the integrated process. As time has gone by, we neither maintained nor reinvented the process that made us so fruitful in earlier days. Time had its impact. Others are running the race now, but the discipleistic worldview has fallen in between the generations. To put it another way, we put so much emphasis on how our way of doing church affected the lost, we failed to notice how it was affecting the saved. Changes and innovations have been added to make the church more welcoming to the lost and unchurched in many of our churches, but little has been done to improve the way we inspire evangelistic discipleship and to make that more desirable to believers in most of our churches. Upon reflection, the most significant and influential death in the modern history of the Southern Baptist Convention was the death of our discipleship process. The defining characteristic of Southern Baptists at our best was being discipleistic, having a passionate evangelistic discipleship, refusing to let go of one in order to pursue the other. But when we loosened our grip on one to strengthen our grip on the other, we weakened both dramatically. Today, we do not know who we are. Our people do not know who we are. The world does not know who we are. Our lost friends and neighbors do not know who we are. Our problem is not that more of us don't witness to our neighbors. Our problem is that more of us don't look like Jesus. For if we do not produce children, youth, and adults who live out a biblical worldview, no strategy for doing church will make us salt and light in the world. Let me just, guys on the screen, let's go to the end. We're losing the distinctness of our voice in this generation. We're blending in more than we're standing out. And our aggressive evangelism without an aggressive discipleship is undoing us. Is there more to SBC problems than this? Yes. But there is at least this. We are becoming the new Methodist. That's the longest introduction you'll ever hear to a sermon, and now you're about to hear the shortest sermon that will ever be preached in this chapel. I take you back to the text that we had at the founding of this chapel, 2 Chronicles chapter 7, verses 14 and 15. Very familiar. If my people who are called by my name humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and I will heal their land. But go on down to verse 19. But if you turn away and forsake my statutes and my commandments, which I have set before you, and go and serve other gods and worship them, then I will uproot you from my land, which I have given you, and from this house, which I have consecrated, and I will cast out of my sight and make this a proverb, a byword among people for the destruction. Please put up the picture of the Western Wall. The picture that they're putting on the screen is the Western Wall of the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, also called the Wailing Wall. The large stones at the very base of that wall are all that is left of God's temple platform during the time of Jesus. The crowds you see are there every day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year, no matter what the weather is. Jews, Christians, pilgrims from all over the world come to see and to weep over what was lost and pray that one day all will be restored. Here's what we know as simply as I know how to say it. In times past, God was doing a great and a mighty work through our Southern Baptist churches. In time present, God is not doing a great and mighty work in most of our churches. Therefore, what are we, what are you going to do to respond to that reality? If we as a people do not repent now, only one question remains. To what wall will our children return to weep and remember what the Southern Baptist Convention used to be? I leave you with this picture of the Wailing Wall. And I leave you with the question, what will you do to respond to this? Or what wall will you send your children to weep and remember?
Thank you for listening to this audio from Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. If you want more information on our academic programs, or if you would like to support our mission, visit www.swbts.edu.